If you have a Bible, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 today, kind of in the middle of the Old Testament. If you can find the book of Psalms, you're close. Go through all those 150 chapters, get through Proverbs, you'll find Ecclesiastes waiting on the other side. If you get to Isaiah, you went too far. So Ecclesiastes right in the middle of the Old Testament. We'll be reading from that in just a little bit. But before that, I got to tell y'all a story that may make you not take me seriously anymore. It may make you feel seen and heard and represented today. I don't know which side of the aisle you're on. Probably the previous, but or the former, but we'll see. So the other night, I did something that I probably haven't done, or at least cannot remember doing, in at least 10, maybe 15 years. I know this is going to, some of you are going to think he's just lying just to have a story to tell. I don't do that. I tell authentic, real life experiences. Y'all know that, but which is why I don't tell many stories about myself. I don't have many that are that interesting. This one might not be interesting, but at least it works to get us where we're going. So the other night, I listened to the radio. Now, some of y'all might listen to the radio all the time, but if you're my age or younger, you'll understand this, but I think most of you know that every car the last 15 years off the assembly line has some kind of hookup for your iPod or for your iPhone or for your phone, and whether it's auxiliary ports, Bluetooth, USB, your phone or your device hooks up to your car if it's been off the assembly line, you know, since 2007 or 8 or whatever. So before that, you could even do these jerry-rig things where you put a tape in the tape deck and it had a little cord coming off of it, and you plugged your phone in, and your phone would, the radio would think it was playing a tape, but it really was your phone plugged into it. Regardless, so for many different ways, since about 2008 or 9, I've been listening to either my iPod or my phone in the car. So yeah, I know you could listen to tapes or CDs well before then, but since I've been driving, since 2007 or 8, I've always had either an iPod or now an iPhone. I just get in the car, and my phone just kind of automatically plugs in, and I just don't listen to the radio. I listen to music, I listen to podcasts or whatever, I listen to things that are kind of like the radio. I just don't ever turn the dial and listen to the radio. But other night, I'd been visiting with Ken, and then I had a meeting with the Christian ministry group after that, and I hadn't charged my phone all day, and y'all know I've kind of been playing musical chairs with cars recently, but I finally got my car fixed, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, I wasn't in my car. I don't have a charger. I've just not really been responsible with that. So I was in the truck. It was late at night, about 8:30. My phone died, so I had no way to charge it. So I decided that I would check out the radio, which, again, I haven't really done. I mean, I've probably listened to it here or there, but as far as me driving and turning the dial, I haven't. And I did that thing that maybe you've done before, where you just kind of hit the button and just see what's on every channel. Because again, I don't listen to radio, so I was just wondering, hey, what is on the radio on a Monday night at 8:30? And if you're curious, not much is going on at Monday nights at 8:30. But one of the songs that I heard that really took me back, that maybe some of y'all you have this album, maybe you still pull this CD out every once in a while, or you turn this on the MP3 player, but I heard playing a very familiar song, took me straight back to the 90s. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. Now, you know, I grew up in the 90s. You know, Aerosmith kind of had a comeback surge in the late 90s after being a bigger, you know, previously. So, you know, that genre of music just immediately took me back to being a kid and listening, hearing this song. You couldn't get away from this song in, like, you know, summer 1998. Of course, the song was big because it was with the movie, which is a picture on the album cover, which is the meteor that's coming towards the Earth. So Armageddon was a big movie back in the day, and back in summer 1998, and y'all probably know the story. You know, that Steven Tyler wrote the song, his daughter starred in the movie, played the main character. But, you know, sometimes God answers big prayers and does a miracle. Sometimes he just makes your preacher have an introduction for a sermon. So either way, God is always doing something good. But if you've ever seen the movie Armageddon, I thought about dimming the lights and handing out lighters, and we all just listen to the song, and we let the you know, ambiance or whatever. But I thought better of that. But if you've ever seen the movie Armageddon, you know, it's super dramatic. You know, back in the late 90s, there was all those movies about the world ending because everybody thought the year 2000 would be the world ending, and even people that weren't religious, they just kind of had that fear of that number, right? And we all lived it. If you're too young to remember it, it's easy to make fun of us. But back in those days, Armageddon. Armageddon was a super, super dramatic movie, very patriotic, right? America was going to try to save the world, and the world was already kind of on fire. Meteors had been striking the planet. You know, China got hit. The other countries got hit. It was just this big, big dramatic thing. And of course, the same theme song is about, hey, the world could end any minute. And about this couple and the girl, her dad's an astronaut, her fiance's an astronaut. Are they going to live? And one doesn't, and one does. Y'all know the story, or you should watch it if you haven't. That movie's about, hey, the world could end any minute, and you don't really want to waste any minute of this short life. And maybe it's because the last few months for me have been kind of stressful. With that song, and I was just listening to it, and I'd already prepared to do a series kind of on this subject, so it was just kind of, it was good timing, or at least I forced this to be part of the sermon. I don't know. But the last couple months, I've just been thinking about the uncertainty, not to bring the mood down, but we'll pick it back up, don't worry. But I've been thinking about the uncertainty, the instability, the fragile nature of this life. You know, y'all know Andy was very sick across the fall into the holidays. If you've ever been through a period of just constant chronic illness or alongside somebody that you love, you know that after a few visits to the doctor, you know, they start suspecting and looking for more serious things, more you know, concerning things. So, you know, Andy went through the whole gauntlet of blood work and tests. We were at the doctor probably 15 times across 8 weeks. They were, you know, looking for anything and everything. Thankfully, your prayers and God's power and some help they've done for her immune system, she's doing a lot better, and we are so grateful for that. But you know, when you go through a season like that, or even several months, or even several years, like many of you've been through before with people that you love or your own health, that can weary even the most positive of souls. You know, alongside of that, and again, now y'all know, but alongside of that, Lindsay found out she's pregnant around Thanksgiving with her health concerns. There was a lot of tense moments at the ER a couple times. They were very concerned about the viability of her pregnancy and all those things. And the doctors gave you a new reason to worry every time. And again, thankfully, because of God's power and many prayers, our baby boy, if you haven't heard, he's doing great. And the health risk concern that Lindsay has, they've all subsided. But you know, it seems silly that if you've been through a season, it seems silly when you've come out of that season to ever have worried at all. You think, you know, why did I worry? Why were we stressed out? But you know, even if it's something you've been through before or something brand new, when the stress compiles across several days or several weeks, sometimes it's hard to imagine the pressure and uncertainty letting up. Sometimes you get in those seasons of life where things are just so tense and so difficult, you kind of become hardened, and you kind of become so head down in the situation that you wonder, you know, is it ever going to not be so stressful and so wearisome? So going through all that just kind of got me into this headspace of wanting to make the most, wanting to maximize the gift of each day. Especially, Andy's been fever-free for a month, which again, that's a big deal. She was sick for about 4 months straight. And now we've been able to finally get excited over the new baby after several weeks of wondering if that was going to end, unfortunately. So when you're in the middle of the storm clouds, you can sometimes wish away the days because you're just hoping things to get better. But on this side of the new year, I've tried each day a little more to be slow and to cherish the time and the people that God has put in my life. But alongside of all that, since the end of last year, I've been to 4 funerals, and I've got to go to another one tomorrow, and I'm going to officiate another one here in a few days. So that's 6 funerals in 6 weeks of this new year. Now, we've also been praying for some dear friends and neighbors. Will's longtime pastor, Dale Peterson, I shook his hand at a funeral on one day, and the next day I find out he's in critical condition at a hospital. Marcus Redding down the road at Salem, many of you know him. He's been in the hospital with critical condition. So a lot of people, right? I just saw him 2 days before that, and then I find out he's in the hospital. So life can change so fast. And people that are walking around completely healthy one day can be in critical condition the next day. And I know none of us want to think about this stuff, but that's kind of a snapshot of just the last 8 or 9 weeks of my life, and I've been observing all this. There are no doubt more people that are going through things that we don't even know about, and I've talked to many of you. We've had family members on both sides of mine and Lindsay's family who've had health scares, and for some reason, You know, maybe it's the on the backside of the whirlwind that was December for me. I've just been more acutely aware of it, and it just seems like the past few weeks have been heavier than normal. Now some of you, maybe your life has been pretty stress-free, and I'm glad for it. But as a minister, I'm used to being a little more morose, a little more mellow. I'm used to hearing about things and people reaching out to me about things. It seems like a little bit more than normal the last couple of weeks. I've been receiving texts and calls about, hey, so-and-so's at the hospital, pray for them, all these things. It just kind of feel like they just are a lot at one time. But I tell you, and I'm not exaggerating, as I start thinking about all the people that I know that have passed away or face major health scares in this year alone, it got a little overwhelming for me, to be honest. Now, I've been doing this for 14 years as of this spring. I don't know if maybe I shouldn't have been doing it for that long, but I've been doing this for 14 years in some capacity. In terms, my number has been given to people as a, hey, you should call this guy or text this guy if things are going down for you. And maybe it's just the January depression talking. I don't really think so. But processing and dwelling on this over the past few weeks, it took me to a place mentally and spiritually that I just felt led to talk to y'all about this. And I began planning this series 3 weeks ago. And that was before some of the things that I mentioned to you happened. So as I began planning this, preparing this, I just thought it was a good time to talk about something that I think all of us can relate to, and all of us, I think, maybe should think about it if we haven't thought about it. I did a video about this on social media a few weeks ago, but since then, it's just matured into a more in-depth message. So we're going to jump into a text that I've been sitting on and sitting with for a few weeks, and then I want to unpack the whole topic from there. And it's in a text that might be a little obscure for you and not one that you read that often, but it's just one that has been speaking to me particularly with all this that I've mentioned in mind. Ecclesiastes 7. It says, a good name or a good reputation, and this is in the context of somebody passing away, a good name is better than precious ointment. The day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, or all people, and the living will take it to heart. Now, if you don't know, Ecclesiastes is basically a journal that King Solomon kept late in his life. If you want to know the short summary of Ecclesiastes, it is Solomon's journal, King Solomon's journal. If you ever kept a journal or you read someone's journal entries, you know that journals are all over the place. Journals are very rambly. Journals are very random. So if you read Ecclesiastes and wonder why one chapter doesn't flow to the next or why midstream he changes topics, it's because that's how journals work. One minute you're writing about this, next minute you're writing about that. Maybe you don't expect anybody ever to read it because it's just your journal. But Solomon was a very, obviously very well-known man, very powerful man, successful man. But in this point in his life, at the end of his life, he is in a very reflective headspace where he is writing these entries. He's lived a full life, a long life. He's experienced highs that go beyond anything we've ever experienced, being the king, being a wealthy, powerful man. But also he'd faced his shares of lows, some self-induced and some circumstantial. If you'll remember, Solomon is probably most famous for becoming king at just 19 years old. And immediately Solomon recognized he was in way over his head. I can relate to this on a much, much, much smaller scale. I started talking in front of people on a regular basis at 19. I don't know if you call what I did back then preaching or teaching, but at least I was talking, so I'll just say I started talking at 19. That's a whole other thing, right? No, I've been talking in front of people since I was 19, and I can relate to King Solomon. Again, bigger stakes for him. When he was 19 years old, his dad passed away. He became the king of Israel, and Solomon immediately recognized that, hey, I am in over my head. So Solomon, famously, on the night of his coronation, prayed this prayer. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this, your great people, or who is able to do this job? Solomon, again, thousands and thousands of people relied on him. He was the king of the nation of God's people. He immediately recognized, I am in way over my head. Who in the world could ever do this job, let alone do it well? God, give me wisdom, give me knowledge, give me perspective, give me understanding. And God did exactly that. And if you've ever read the book of Proverbs, Proverbs is his publication that was really a handbook given to young men and women in Israel that kind of give them the basics in life, to teach them about how to live, how to have relationships, how to conduct themselves financially. It's a very good practical book that all of us can benefit from. Ecclesiastes is less about telling us what to do, though, and more about telling us how Solomon felt and giving us reasons to think through what we are going through. So in the couple of verses that we read, Solomon is thinking about how some of his good friends, some of the good friends that he had lost over the years, he's thinking about their passing. And maybe not just people that he knew very well, but being the king, he knew a lot of people, had a lot of people that would have come across his desk over the years, thousands of people that he had met. And he knew a lot of people, and he's thinking about a lot of people who had good reputations, who were renowned, recognized for being good people. And he's reflecting on all those that had preceded him in death. He specifically references how when people pass away, everybody automatically starts to reflect and sort through memories. It's just what we do, right? And Solomon says, someone that has lived a good life leaves an inspiring message. That's what verse 1 means. A good name or a good legacy, a good reputation, and again, he's talking about someone passing away based on verse 2. He says, a good name, a good legacy is better than ointment, as in it's refreshing and inspiring. It's like, you know, medicine for a wound or ointment for a wound. A good legacy is inspiring as medicine is healing. Does that make sense? Solomon says, a good name leaves an inspiring message. So we got to talk about this, though. A good life. A good life. What is a good life? What defines a good life? And what is the definition of a good life? And what isn't the definition of a good life? When people pass away, nobody cares about how much money they had. Let's just be frank about it. When somebody passes away, nobody talks about how big their house was, how much property they owned. Nobody talked about how successful their business was. Nobody talked about how famous somebody was, how many trophies they had on their shelf. Come on, when somebody passes away, all that's talked about is the kind of person they were. What kind of person were they? And if not much is talked about, it indicates that maybe they weren't too good of a person. Right? Just being honest. If someone had a good name, a good reputation, a good legacy, it tells the direction their life was aimed in. Let me say that again. A good life is defined by the direction the life was aimed in. Let me explain. Your life can be aimed in three possible directions. And by aimed, I mean I'm going to do this with my life. I'm going to aim my life in this direction for this purpose, for this meaning. Your life can be aimed, this is not rocket science, right? You don't need to be inspired to figure this out. Your life can be aimed in three possible directions. Maybe two at a time, probably not all three at a time. We'll talk about that. Your life can be aimed in three possible directions. It can be aimed inward, it can be aimed outward, or it can be aimed upward, and it can be aimed upward. If our lives are aimed exclusively inward, let's talk about that for a minute. If our lives are aimed inward, then guess what? Our lives serve a very narrow, forgettable purpose. But if our lives are aimed outward and upward towards others and towards God, our lives take on a greater, broader, significant purpose. And here's why we need to hear this in our day and age, in our generation, more than ever. This world is set up. Everything about this world is focused on leading you down a path into a life that is totally 100% inward. This world is cheering you on. Aim inward. Aim inside. Focus on you. That is the dream. That is the American dream. Ensconcing yourself in a bubble with all that you want, with all that you need, maybe a select few people that get the privilege of knowing you. And everyone that follows you down, follows this path, eventually sees even the people that are closest to them as cogs in the machine to keep the wheels turning and keep them happy. This happens in marriage, this happens in families all the time, where all of a sudden the people that you claim you love, you really just see them as a cog in a machine. They're there to keep your life as pleasant as it can be. And you didn't intend on that to happen. But you lived inward. You focused on you. And as you focused on you, even the people closest to you became commodities. They became tools in your life. Now that's an extreme illustration, but it's honestly the end result of a life that is mostly and totally aimed selfishly, inwardly, where time and money and talent and energy is leveraged and allocated for the purpose of building up itself. Now when I say this, a life is aimed inwardly, it doesn't have to just be this grotesque, sinful example. It can be a squeaky, clean, moralistic life where time and money and talent and energy is all about building up self. And that is just as tragic as someone who lives a very sinful life. Listen, if you live this way, if we live this way, if we live for ourselves, at the end of our lives, we will have nothing to show for ourselves but ourselves. If you never hear anything I say ever again, maybe write that one down. I think that one's something you should think about. If we live for ourselves, at the end of this life, because all of us have an end, if we live for ourselves at the end of this life, the only thing we have to show for ourselves is ourselves. This is what Jesus was talking about when he made that powerful, very famous, often repeated statement. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? What will he give in return for his soul if at the end of the life he realizes, she realizes, all I have to show for me is me? What would it profit a person if they gained everything, but at the end of the life they realize they can't take anything with them? The legacy, the power, the wealth, all the accomplishments. If you realize, hey, all I've got is me. And all I got is what people think about me, know about me, have heard about me, have seen in me. And if that's all there is to me, if all there is to me is what I did for me, there's nothing left. Our souls, this is what Jesus is telling us here. Our soul's merit and value and weight is directly attached to the kind of life we live. It's determined by what we do with our lives and where or how we aim our lives. This is why the entire New Testament is all about leading us to live outward and upward lives. If you want to know what the practical application of the New Testament is, the entire purpose of it is to show us how to live a life that is outward and upward focused.